we have had some companies come and go that I guess I would say I was a little surprised they came in at all, like CPC International, Karn Products, old Karn Products company, or Pennzoil. But we've held on to Roman Haas and all these companies, and it's very good for the students. A PhD candidate will probably present his work two or three times before this group in the course of his study. He will go to dinner with the group, he'll go to lunch with the group. So this student will get a chance to get to know people who are there, who are interested in his work, and who might be interested in offering a job. Well, it happens. And now we see, when we have a meeting of the SRP of our sponsors, maybe 8 or 10 of these people coming in out of maybe 50 or 60 will be our own graduates. They're now at the companies, and they are coming back to hear what we're doing and write a report. So, yeah, I'll show you one of our newsletters where we had a picture of this. So it's been just a lot of fun. It does take a lot of time, because if you have 35 companies and you're their point of contact, you get a lot of phone calls, you get a lot of visits. Next week we're having 3M in. Spend a day with them. They say they're very seriously interested in joining, and I think they are. It takes time. And I would like to, we're looking for another person. I mentioned this earlier. They can handle some administrative work, teach the design course, and just let me do some of my own research and separations and writing. It may happen by next September. Meanwhile, I'm a full-time faculty member. But it's been a lot of fun.
What kind of expectations did they give you? You had in your own mind what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Were you given any expectations from the university?
You know, I really wasn't. I was expected to teach a class every semester. That was it. They had to sort of bet on the com that I wouldn't come down and just sit around. And see, I came with a tenured appointment and a chair. As a matter of fact, I switched chairs a few years ago.
Yes.
And the reason was that when that first chair, the company, the university was willing to take on a chair with a $500,000 endowment. Well, that, after a while, began to get a little crowded. And so they found another chair, the Maquetta chair, with over twice that endowment. Well, there's another story to that. The John Maquetta chair was funded by his business and professional associates. He is an emeritus professor of our department and a longtime friend of mine. And he wanted me to have that chair. So John McKenna helped. But they really didn't. There wasn't anything that they told me that I was expected to do. They might have been saying, well, he's done pretty well so far. We would expect him to continue to do so. The university was generous in giving me some startup money for research and has been generous since. So it's been a great experience. And I think now that I'm coming up on 13 years, so that's not as long a second career as I would like, but it's not too bad. And it won't end next July, I hope.
How was it attracting graduate students when you first came here?
It was not difficult at all, because these students had heard of me and had seen some of my publications, and I immediately loaded up with as many students as my research funding would support. Now, you do have to recognize that in chemical engineering here, as in most institutions, our students have support, financial support. If not with money from the faculty or the university, from their own countries or their companies, in very few cases from their families. So that's part of the game. If you take on a student, you have to have the money to support the student. Right now, I happen to have three students who are here on Mexico scholarships. Pays their tuition and fees, medical insurance, books. So that's kind of nice. What I will do in some cases, I will augment that money a little bit so they can afford to buy a computer, that sort of thing. But So I didn't have any trouble in attracting the students. It was more of a problem initially of just getting the funding for them. I had one student come in right after I got here. He wanted to work with me. He was from Taiwan, turned out to be one of the best communicators and one of the smartest students I've ever known. And he was willing to be a grader for other people initially until I could find the money. So it worked out pretty well.
You had a number of people that started producing master's theses quite early. Your first PhD thesis student was 84, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, the first two students I had for a PhD were Chan and Matthews, and then Shork. Yes, the first three students I got were master's people. Perhaps the fourth one I've forgotten right now of the sequence. But that was good too. Before I developed some directions of the program, I could work with shorter projects. They were all experimental research projects. And also, the commitment was for less time. So that was kind of a it was good for me because that gave me enough time to formulate what more expanded programs I might want to undertake.
The direction of the research that you did here still follows, it seems to follow pretty much, well, distillation in a broad sense, I suppose. Although I guess if one were to pinpoint your areas of specialization, I guess I've seen heat transfer being
I was interested in separations and heat transfer, and I've had some projects on heat transfer, some on combined heat and mass transfer, but the areas have been more distillation, extraction, and in more recent times, adsorption. Right now, I have more students in adsorption than I have in the other fields. And within extraction, we got involved fairly early in the game in supercritical fluid extraction. We have a nice facility for that, too.
Well, one of the things I also noticed is that you got into very early, it seems, structured column packings versus random packings.
Yes, I think that we have really the premier know-how on that here. And we certainly made presentations all over the world on that, and will in England next September. But that was a case where a device was developed in large part empirically, was found to work well for the cases that were where it was applied, and it intrigued us as to why it worked as it did and what the contacting mechanisms were for developing a thin film surface on a liquid, thin film of liquid on a textured, specially treated surface. And the extent of the film formation depends on this surface, as well as the wettability of the material, surface material. So we've done a lot of work on that, and I think it's been very good work. The packing type is, of course, is not proprietary with us at all, but it's been big business for the vendors of packings of this type and also for the users. For example, down at the Texas City plant, one distillation column was retrofitted with structured packing at a cost of over $8 million 10 years ago. Just one distillation column. But it was justified as a vacuum column for styrene. So, yeah, I would say that our know-how on structured is, I think it's better than the vendors have, with the possible exception of Sulzer Brothers in Switzerland. We can't tell. They don't disclose all of their knowledge.
A few years ago, you gave a lecture for the Joe J. King Award.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get it, since it's a local, I wasn't able to get a copy of it.
I have many copies for you here.
Okay. But the title, of course, is obviously one that catches your eye, Separations Essential to Life and Well-Being.
Yes. Well, that was for a special lecture, and incidentally, the King Award lecture for this year is being given this afternoon. For a very mixed audience. So I had really treated it as a lay audience. My wife was there, and her brother was there. So I really dealt with the separations that would be familiar to these people. And I have to do that fairly often. I know I gave a talk on the SRP to a group of purchasing agents from various companies around Austin, including state purchasing people. And so I got up to the stand, and I had with me a tumbler half filled with water. And then I got out a jigger glass. It was actually filled with iced tea. I said, now I'm going to undertake a very simple operation. I pour the contents of this jigger glass into the water, stir it with my finger, and I've got a mixture. Real easy. Suppose I wanted to take that brown liquid back out of that mixture. Extremely difficult. Of course, alcohol and water form an azeotrope, as you know. And the idea is it's easy to mix. It's hard to unmix, to separate. And so that's kind of the approach that I used in that lecture. And if you have any extra space, I'll
sure.
If nothing else, it'll show you what the university does for this undertaking.
Thank you.
So, but it mentioned, for example, the separations in the body. One of our faculty members is very much involved in the development of artificial kidneys. So that was just a sort of a summary article, but you'll find in there some material on membrane separations and so on.
In the last few years, you've had several papers with I'm assuming they're coming out of the separations group, but for example, there's one in 87, three authors, and you were the only one from UT. So somebody from Roman Haas, and somebody from Garrett. And then a few years later, you had another one with somebody from Germany, and I'm intrigued in that variety of authorship.
Yeah, we get into this with the separations program. Now, in the case of the one from Germany, John Stickelmeyer, I got him to come over and spend a semester with us. He's at the University of Essen. And we started some collaborative work that we continued after we went back. And then I got him a second grant to come back. At that time, we plunged into a book, a comprehensive distillation book, which we're working on right now. He has a Macintosh in his office, and I have a Macintosh in my office. They're compatible, and we send diskettes back and forth. But that's what happens in these things. So there are likely to be SRP involvements, but in some cases they're just simply last summer, Mike Biddulph of the University of Nottingham and I had a paper. But again, I got Mike to come over here and spend several months with us, and we worked on a project together.
Distillation, wither, not weather.
Yeah, I don't know about that title, but they didn't change the title that I had given it. Now, that was the keynote opening address at the last International Symposium on Distillation, which was held at Brighton, England. And it was published as part of the proceedings of the conference. And they later contacted me saying that we think that it's kind of buried in these proceedings. Would you like to put it in our journal? Which I did. And it's a pretty prestigious publication of the Institution of Chemical Engineers. So that's how that one happened. But it was a look down the road, if you will, at whether there's any life left in distillation, and if so, what directions it should go.
Well, just a year or so ago, if one were to look at this list of the titles and nothing else, you would be a real disciple for distillation, because I have this one from 1990, Distillation King in Separations.
Well, I'll tell you why this is. If one has a liquid mixture to be separated, if it is amenable to distillation separation, then that will be the cheapest way to do it. There is one particular advantage that distillation has over the other larger scale separation methods. It does not involve what we call a mass separating agent. If I want to separate a mixture using adsorption, I have to find the right adsorbent. By membranes, I have to find the right membrane material. By extraction, I have to find the right solvent. Distillation uses energy. It can be brought in various forms. Energy is energy, you might say. It simplifies the research and development costs if you can do it. Now, one of the things that we're very much into now, that there's at least one paper on it, is the use of artificial intelligence approaches to develop expert systems. And I have two people now working with me on that ostensibly will emulate a person, the expert, in directing the development of a design. What's the best way to separate this mixture? And invariably, and you've probably had this experience, the junior engineer goes into the office of the gray-haired expert. He's made an appointment. And he has this mixture. And the question is, how shall I go about separating this mixture? Well, what is the first question of the expert? What are the boiling points? If the boiling points are spaced out to the right extent, the suggestion is, well, let's try distillation first. Now, the boiling points and I might not be spaced out enough. There might be azeotropes. There might be heat sensitivity. But my point is, the first consideration, let's see if distillation will work, because if it will work, that's going to be the way to do it. The problem's done. But what you get into are strange mixtures, perhaps lopsided mixtures, perhaps very dilute mixtures in a sense, where any distillation is not appropriate. And then you get into gas mixture problems. What's the best way to separate air? I'll tell you, 15 or 20 years ago, the answer would be easy. It might even be, what's the only way to separate air? It's by cryogenic distillation. All oxygen plants were distillation plants. Certainly not true today. You have to look at pressure swing adsorption. You have to look at membrane separation as two ways to do it. There are some chemical methods that are being developed too. So for a gas mixture such as air, even if the boiling points of nitrogen, oxygen, argon are spaced enough, distillation may not be the way to do it. So the expert system has to have qualifications built into it. It has to differentiate between a lean mixture and a concentrated mixture. But distillation is still around, and it's so heavily used in the industry, you can't walk away from it. As long as there is anything left to research, and there is. As long as we've been using it, that's a long, long time. We still don't understand a lot about it. But we talked earlier about fractionation research, FRI. FRI does equipment testing. If you start looking around the United States at any university where there is distillation research, you won't find much. You will find some theoretical work at Massachusetts and at Clarkson. And that's about it. Excuse me, Ken. Oh, it's still with us. It's a large energy consumer, too, so there's been a lot of interest in from a conservation point of view. To reduce the energy consumption of distillation.